The movie Control, based on the life of Ian Curtis, the lead singer of the band Joy Division, didn't play in theaters for long when it was released last year, but now you have a second chance because it's out on DVD. So we invited the director, Anton Corbijn, to talk with us. Joy Division was a short-lived but influential British post-punk band. Ian Curtis, the lead singer, killed himself in 1980 at the age of 23. Corbijn became a Joy Division fan after hearing their first album in Holland, where he's from. His love of their music led him to England, where he ended up taking now-famous photos of the band. Corbijn went on to create the visual image of many other bands, including U2 and Depeche Mode, through his album cover photos and rock videos. In a review of Control in the New York Times, film critic A.O. Scott wrote, "You don't have to know anything about Joy Division to grasp the mysterious sorrow at its heart." Here's Joy Division's best-known recording, "Love Will Tear Us Apart." The band Joy Division. In the film Control, the lead singer Ian Curtis is played by Sam Riley. Here he is toward the end of the film, just before the band is about to embark on what was to be its first U.S. tour, a tour that never happened because of Curtis's suicide.
I don't want to be in the band anymore. Unknown Pleasures was it. I was happy. I never meant for it to grow like this. When I'm up there, singing, they don't understand how much I give and how it affects me.
Panic's over. He's here.
But now they want more. They expect me to give more.
Just enjoy yourself.
And I don't know if I can. It's like it's not happening to me, but someone pretending to be me. Someone dressed in my skin. And now we're going to America. I've no control anymore. I don't know what to do.
Anton Corbijn, welcome to Fresh Air. Why did you decide to make the movie Control? You'd liked Joy Division for a long time. You'd taken pictures of them. Some of those pictures had become pretty famous. Why did you want to make the film?
Well, I initially didn't want to make the film, I should say, because in some countries people describe my work as being that of a rock photographer, which I kind of understand, but I am not a rock photographer. I'm a photographer who does portraits, and a lot of these portraits are musicians, but it's generally artists that I like. But because of that, I was afraid that if I will do a movie that connects to the music world, it might be called a rock film, and that would severely limit my audience. And I was approaching 50, and I had felt for a while that it was a little weird for somebody my age to still work from obsessions from his teenage years. So I wanted to, in a way, cap that off, and I felt that the movie might be a really good way to make an end to that whole period of teenage obsessions, and at the same time maybe make a new start, which is working a bit more in film.
Well, I like what you just said about wanting to like go back one more time to your teenage obsessions and then put it behind you. But you were around 50 when you made Control, as opposed to being a young man, which is what you were when you first photographed Joy Division. Do you feel like you didn't understand then how troubled he was, and how it wasn't just artistry that was being communicated when he seemed to be lonely and in pain on stage? He really was in a great deal of pain.
I didn't realize that, no. And I don't think a lot of the others really realize that. There's this quote that I read recently from, I'm not sure if it's Bernard or Hookie, but...
Who's the bass player in the band.
Yes, the bass player or the guitar player. That after Ian died, they went reading the lyrics and they realized what the lyrics were actually about. They never really listened to them. They was just thinking, well, that's Ian's kind of cup of tea, you know, the lyrics. If people who were so close to him didn't all realize what was really, really happening to him, then, you know, somebody like me who spoke the language a little and didn't really know him, you know, there was no way that I would have realized that.
Now, when you're making a music film about a famous band, you have to decide whether you're going to use the band's actual recordings and have the musicians in the film lip sync, or whether you're going to let the musicians actually perform the music and then risk that they will be compared unfavorably to how the band actually sounded. How did you decide to let the actors perform? And I have to say, they do a really good job.
I totally agree with you. They do an excellent job. Well, I didn't have to persuade them. They had to persuade me, to be fair to them. I never thought I would find actors that could play to that level. Because I was looking for actors, not musicians, to play the roles. And I did want them to play in the film to a degree that it looked believable on film. They needed some lessons, of course, to make that look correct. And during these rehearsals to learn those songs, they became so enthused that they kept rehearsing even in weekends. And by the time we were ready to film the first performance, they begged me to try it for real. And we did. And then that was so good, there was no way back. You know, it was an incredible bonus to the film that the actors were so dedicated to the characters they played. And then, of course, Sam Riley had been a singer for 6 years, so I couldn't be happier that it fell into place as much as that. And the manager of New Order came to look at the rehearsals, and she felt they were maybe even better than Joy Division by that stage. You have to realize that Joy Division, of course, were post-punk band. So it was the period where everybody just went for things, though they might not be able to play properly. They played whatever they could play and learned on stage. And that was all acceptable in those days. But the guys learned to play to that level, and that is apparently doable. You know, I wouldn't be able to copy that, but they learned it all in about 4 weeks, or maybe even less, 3 weeks.
Let's play a track from the soundtrack recording of Control, and this is the only track that actually features the actors performing. Mm-hmm. And this is one of Joy Division's more famous songs, Transmission, and we'll hear it introduced by the character of Tony Wilson, who was the presenter of a music show on Granada TV in England, and put Joy Division on TV for the first time. So first we'll hear the introduction, and then we'll hear the actors performing as Joy Division with Sam Riley as Ian Curtis.
Seeing as how this is the first television program which brought you the first appearances from everyone from the Beatles to the Buzzcocks, we like to think we bring you the most new and interesting sounds in the Northwest. They're called Joy Division and are a Manchester band except for the guitarist who comes from Salford. A very important distinction. This is called Transmission.
We'll be right back.
That's the actors from the movie Control performing a song by Joy Division, and Control is about the band Joy Division. It stars Sam Riley as the band's lead singer and songwriter, Ian Curtis. My guest, Anton Corbijn, directed the movie, and it's just come out on DVD. I think we should describe Ian Curtis's performance style when he was on stage. And, you know, judging from the movie, he kind of like almost punches the air as he sings, and it's kind of like part boxer, part dancer. He looks like somebody who's very inhibited, being very uninhibited when he's on stage.
Yeah, he's a bit like a kickboxing butterfly or something. I we had to study, of course, the movements really well. And you realize he stands a lot on his toes. It's a very peculiar thing to do, and it's not symmetric, his moves. You know, it's really very difficult to copy properly. And maybe some of the, you know, moves that he had when he had epilepsy or epileptic attacks are incorporated in the end into it. I'm not really sure.
And I think what you're referring to is that there's this almost like jerky side-to-side motion that he does.
That's right, yes, yes. I personally have seen a gig by Joy Division where the dancing became an epileptic fit and he fell backwards onto the drum kits, which a similar scene is actually performed in the film.
Now, Ian Curtis got epilepsy. And the way you portray it, he gets his first seizure in a car on the road with the band after complaining mm-hmm. that he's very cold. And when the seizure starts, the way it's portrayed in the film, the members of the band have no idea what's happening. And it takes them a while to realize he's having a seizure and they'd better pull over and tend to him. Is that the way it happened?
I believe so, yes. I don't think anybody had much of a clue about these things, you know. Ian more than the others, because he worked in daytime in an office trying to find work for people who were slightly physically handicapped. And that included people with epilepsy.
So he knew something about epilepsy, but he didn't realize he was going to get it.
Yes.
His widow, Deborah, in her memoir writes that after he started taking the medication for the epilepsy, the mood swings became even worse. She writes, after a gig, he wouldn't go to sleep until he'd had a fit, and it became a ritual for him to sit there and wait for an attack. He was afraid to go to sleep in case he died in his sleep. My guest is Anton Corbijn, director of the film Control, which has just come out on DVD. It's based on the life of Ian Curtis, the lead singer of the post-punk band Joy Division. Curtis killed himself in 1980. Your film Control is shot in black and white. So were the photos that you took of Joy Division when you photographed the band.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you want to shoot the movie in black and white?
Well, purely because everything you remember of Ian Curtis and of Joy Division is in black and white. The reason I photographed them in black and white was not only because it was my favorite way of taking photographs, and I was very bad at color pictures anyway. But it was also because in those days you've shot, of course, with film, which I actually still do, I like to say. And the only people or magazines that were interested in publishing anything on Joy Division were all printed in black and white. So consequently, every photographer that ever shot Joy Division would put a black and white film in the camera, because that was the only way they could sell a photograph. It was not till Ian's death, when they had a hit with Love Will Tear Us Apart, that the color magazines, which was a very different world at the time than black and white magazines, were getting interest in Joy Division. But then, of course, nobody had a color picture of Joy Division. So for that reason, not because of my own aesthetics, but for that reason, I felt black and white was the correct way to shoot this film. Even their own output, the two albums, Closer and Unknown Pleasures, were black and white images.
So in shooting black and white, was there anything special you did to get the black and white tones that you wanted?
Well, it doesn't look like my photography, although the blacks do, and I always like very deep blacks in my photography. But I never use lights, and of course in the film we did light things, so for me it looks quite different than my photography. be shot in color, because the black and white films that exist didn't give us a lot of option. They were very, very grainy. And it's one thing to have grain in a still photograph, but if you have grain on film, it just becomes another element where you have to deal with when you look at the film. So we went for color shooting and then transferred it to black and white.
Well, you went on to take photographs of a lot of bands, do a lot of videos, a lot of album covers, mm-hmm. Metallica, U2, Bryan Adams, Johnny Cash's Delia's Gone video. Nick Cave, yeah.
Depeche Mode, I did 20 videos for, you know.
You know, it's funny, album jackets shrunk when CDs took over and replaced vinyl. And now that downloads are taking over from CDs, I mean, you know, you can choose to download the cover art or you could choose to not bother, but
it's still not
the same. And, you know, videos certainly don't have the prominent place that they used to, even on MTV. So do you feel like the visual part of music that you professionally came of age with is disappearing?
Well, it's definitely different. And you know, I'm old-fashioned, I think. You know, I'm romantic because I still like vinyl more and more so. I like the sound of it. I like the look of it. I like the way you open an album, everything about it. And you can see that actually in the first scene in Control, where Ian comes home having bought A Lad Insane by David Bowie. And that's the event of the week. You know, you come home with your record, you go to the bedroom at your parents' place, you take the record out of the bag and you look at it, you read everything. It all has a meaning. You know, it was something that gave meaning to life. Now, of course, for young kids, there is so much else to do and everything is available at all times. You know, it doesn't have that same meaning in life anymore. And I realized that it's changed.
Do you have a favorite of the album jackets that you've done? I know doing album jackets hasn't been your favorite thing, but you've done your share.
Yeah, no, I'm proud of some. I'm happy to say, but I did well over 100, I'm sure, 150 or so. But some, of course, brought my work to many more places, and one of those was definitely the Joshua Tree by U2, as was Achtung Baby. I think they were quite significant album sleeves for me. The Depeche Mode albums I also design, and I do the I make the logos and all these things, so they're important for me as well as a place to play and try things. And so there's a couple there that I like a lot.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much, Terry.
Anton Corbijn directed the film Control. It's just come out on DVD. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org. Fresh Air's executive producer is Denny Miller. Our engineer is Bob Hurdick. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Seuss Bolin directed the show. I'm Terry Gross.